until midnight. This is Perth Tonight with Chris Ilsley.
If I said to you Mike Lookinland, you'd probably go, I've heard that name somewhere before. Well, you have. He's an American actor, and he's probably best known to you as Bobby Brady in The Brady Bunch. I've got to tell you, he doesn't look like Bobby Brady so much anymore. More like Bobby Brady's father. And he joins us on the program because you're in Perth right now for Supernova. Welcome to Perth.
Thanks a lot. It's funny you should say that because when I look in the mirror, it's starting to happen that I think to myself, what is my father doing in this room with me? Oh, wait, that's me. I do look a lot like my own father.
When I think of TV actors, there were some who played parts in TV series that went on and on and on, and they were very successful. And at some point, one of the favourite characters would leave, and they'd ask the actor, why'd you leave? Your character was so popular. And they'd say, I don't want to be identified with that character. I guess playing a child, when you're a child, makes it easier for you not to be identified with that character, because obviously you change as you grow up.
I did quite a few roles after The Brady Bunch that, you know, I just fell into them, you know, as a teenager, a lot of commercials and a couple of feature films. And it wasn't ever really a problem for me because, like you said, we were just kids playing kids. It was a bit more of a problem, the typecasting for some of the other cast members like Susan, who was Cindy. Who was because she just was Cindy Brady to everyone, where I was sort of growing up and starting to look a little different, and it wasn't that much of a problem for me. But then again, you know, I didn't really seriously pursue much of an acting career beyond my late teens.
How did you become Bobby Brady?
My story came from the father's family picture on his desk at work, and people would walk by, and you know, we're in Los Angeles where everybody works in the movie business, or at least that's the, you know, that's the cliche.
That's certainly the perception. Yeah.
Right. Well, people who had ties to the film industry would see our picture of the family photo on the desk and say, hey, you know, here's a number of an agent. You should call her and get your kids into commercials. And it worked rather quickly. My brother and I did a lot of commercials. My sister did some modeling and TV commercials. Prior to getting the job on The Brady Bunch, which is by far and away, of course, the most well-known thing I was ever associated with, I had only had two jobs. I had been in a Band-Aid commercial, and I had been in a paper towel commercial in which you didn't even see me. You only saw my hands. So you know, my acting career wasn't exactly, you know, there wasn't a lot on my resume, but that's what the producers of The Brady Bunch wanted. They wanted natural
kids. Sort of like, we'll get this guy in because he's got a nice pair of hands kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I was in a lot of toy commercials as well because I had good hands.
Mm. They pay you for those? Did you get some money out of it?
Sure. You get paid for screen time, you know, just like you would if you were, you know, Sandlot in a movie.
Hence the reason all those suggestions. Now, when you were suggested for Bobby Brady, you obviously had to go and audition.
Mm-hmm.
And you were suggested. You didn't actively apply for the job. Is that correct?
Well, what happens is the producers send out the call to agents, and they say, we need brunette. We need dark-haired 10-year-olds or 7 through 10. And so the agents will send their kids to the interviews, and the producers will pick through the kids and pick the ones they like. Bobby was the last member of the Brady cast who was cast. They had trouble finding Bobby. They went through L.A., and then they went through Chicago and New York and came back to L.A., which is where I lived. And they said, we like you, but your hair is red, and we can't have that. You have to have black hair. And so we said, okay, well, you can dye it. So we dyed my hair as a 9-year-old child, which was kind of odd. But nowadays, if you need green hair or green skin for that matter, you just do it. Yeah, yeah. Or they paint you on and digitally afterwards, right? But yeah, in those days it was kind of odd for me to go to work one day with red hair and come home with black hair, but we eventually, you know, I lived to tell the tale, right?
How many years did the Brady Bunch run for? It was quite a number of years, wasn't it?
Not really. At the time, a five-year run was big for a sitcom. But then, you know, right after us, there was, or you know, within a few years after us, there were shows doing much longer runs than 5 years. Yeah. What did MASH do? MASH did 17 or something.
Yeah, it was some record. I think MASH was a record, though.
My favorite show, which is The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's still going.
Will never end. they're just starting, I think, their 26th episode.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean season.
I suppose one of the reasons why a situation comedy like The Brady Bunch could only last a certain length of time is obviously because the actors age.
The whole premise was...
But I guess also the times change as well, don't they? Like, the thing that makes The Simpsons, I guess, ageless is the fact that it is truly timeless.
They can just make fun of anything, of any kind, of any sort, anytime.
At any time.
Right.
And the characters, because they're cartoons, never age.
Sure. Our show, you know, if you think of it that way, had a built-in expiration date, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because we weren't cute anymore, to put it bluntly.
Were you cute? Did you all get on, or were you like a bunch of kids on a set and you would fight like brothers and sisters fought in real life?
There was very little, there wasn't much contentiousness between us. We were all friends and we still are friends. But you know, we were kids, and we were rambunctious, and we had a good time playing, but we were also kept on a pretty tight leash. You know, I mean, we're talking about 10, 11-year-olds, and the older kids were 14, 15 when we first started. I mean, that's really, we were just children, right?
Yeah.
And we were. They were smart enough, they being the production and our parents and the other cast members, they were smart enough to know that, you know, especially considering the type of show it was, that we should really just be allowed to be children.
Yeah.
And we were. And that's, I think that's part of the beauty of the show that still shows through.
Well, I guess if they didn't allow you to do that, it wouldn't have come across naturally, and that would have meant the show probably wouldn't have worked.
Right. Mm. And it's one thing that children all these years... can see and relate to when they watch the show.
There is a rule about not working with kids and animals. They chose to work with six kids. Right. Looking back, do you think but they the had anim- a the animals, really hard job?
The animals didn't last long. They Tiger, you know, didn't want to climb the stairs or do his whatever trick they wanted him to do on camera. And they said, okay, no more. We don't have time. We can't spend the time with a dog. And the Tiger just disappeared. There was no more Tiger. Tiger was the dog, right?
Yeah, nobody ever said anything about it. He just disappeared.
Right.
Did they ever have to get tough with you kids? Like, would there ever be a time when you'd have one of the child actors who get a bit cranky?
There were people on the set whose job it was to keep us happy. And that doesn't mean, feed us ice cream and let us, you know, do whatever we want. It just meant keep us interested, keep us lively, keep us going. As far as like a disciplinary action, the only one I really recall coming down on us was when Florence Henderson's son, Joseph, and I were caught up in the high rafters where the big lights are, the lights that light up the backyard. Because, you know, the whole house, including the backyard, was inside.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I realized that.
Obviously, now that we have high-def televisions, it's even more obvious. We were caught. We had climbed the ladder up to where the big lights were hanging, from the ceiling. And it was, I couldn't tell you how high it was, but... It's a pretty big stage, and we were up in the ceiling. And when that happened, when they caught us, it was made very clear that we were not to be up there ever again. And I don't think we ever went back up there.
You got the message. Yeah. What have the reunions been like for you over the years?
It's always been fun because I always said yes when they said, hey, you know, you want to come do play Bobby again? I always said yes every time. Just because I didn't live in Hall or in California anymore, and I wanted to, it was sort of a nostalgic thing almost for me, just like it was for for America, you know, and for the viewers. But I always enjoyed doing it, so I always said yes. And it's fun to come back and just, you know, just play actor again, even though I didn't really take it too seriously as a career.
What was your main career after acting?
Well, I went to the University of Utah and studied engineering for a little while, and I ended up in the film school, the film studies department, and I got a film degree, and ended up working as a cameraman for over 20 years. I was a PA, and I was a camera assistant, and a focus puller. So if you look on the credits of a movie, it says first assistant cameraman. That was me. And I did that for a very long time.
Okay.
And most recently, it was going on 10 years ago now that I started. I decided that I'd been in the movie business since I was 8 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
It struck me that if I wanted to try something else, I better do it fairly soon, or it's going to be too late. and then I'll, you know, I'd never know. My wife brought home a library book, and the name of the book was How to Make Concrete Countertops, believe it or not. And I read that book, and I said, honey, I'm quitting my job. And I now run a small company, a couple employees and myself. We make concrete countertops. And it's an interesting pursuit, let me tell you.
Oh, a bit.
We do a lot of fireplaces and fancy things like benches and sink basins and things, but it's all polished concrete. It's beautiful.
And of course, you'll be at Supernova this weekend.
Oh yes, Supernova. Mm. Yes, we should talk about that.
Indeed, yeah, because one of the things I believe you're going to be doing is signings and photo sessions.
Absolutely,
which will be really interesting when you come with this psychological view of Bobby Brady, who I don't want to be a dad. Where's the kid?
Right, I know it's that goes full circle to where we started. My. You have me, and you have a table full covered with photos of the old me, or in other words, the young me.
Yeah.
And so you can pick from a photo of me now, or you can pick from an old Bobby Brady photo. Either way, and I'll sign it for you. And but I should say that when Supernova was scheduled, and I found out that I had a conflict back home. I'm only going to be there on Saturday.
Yeah.
So Susan Olsen and I will be there Saturday, and then Sunday it'll just be Susan, poor thing. Leave her all alone by herself.
That's all right. She'll survive. Now, just before we finish, and thank you.
I'm going to tell her you said that.
She'll survive. That's it. Hey, just one more thing before you duck out of here. I believe after you left the Bradys, you appeared alongside Paul Newman.
Right.
And that was in that movie, The Towering Inferno.
That was a hoot for a kid my age at the time to be involved in.
I was a kid when I saw the movie, and I had a sticker, and it said, I'm red hot. I've seen The Towering Inferno. Did you ever see those stickers?
I had one that said, what is it? I still have it. It said, the hot one for 74, or the hot one for 75, 1975, right? The hot one, Towering Inferno. Little round sticker with red. It was red, round, right? Was it round?
No, the one we had was just a...
Was it square?
It was sort of rectangular, yeah. And it was black with red writing. I'm red hot. I've seen The Towering Inferno.
I
thought it was really cool.
It was fun. Irwin Allen would run around the set with a bullhorn saying, more fire! More fire! That was his, basically his role as a director. He was the director.
So what did you do in The Towering Inferno?
I got saved by Paul Newman. He carried me out of my smoking apartment building. The premise was our mother was deaf.
Yes.
So she didn't hear...
Oh, I remember that.
She didn't hear the fire alarms. So O.J. Simpson and Paul Newman, who were chief of security and the architect...
Yep.
They said, what about the Albright family? And that was us. And they ran up to the whatever floor and where we lived. It was some of the building was residential. And Paul Newman carried me out of my smoking apartment. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't go down. We had to go up.
That's right.
Yeah, so I ended
up, fire was down.
I ended up on the top floor for the whole big finale. It was great. I was 14 years old and I was working on this crazy, wild special effects movie, and it was a thrill.
I bet it was. Hey, it's been a thrill having you in here. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And as Mike Lookinland said, he will be at Supernova on Saturday signing autographs, and you've actually got a choice of photographs through the years.